Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center presents Doc Talk, an informative health series educating our community on the services provided at Peace Health. We will begin with our host, George Henry, after these messages.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. One out of eight. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
At Peace Health, we believe no one is ever just one thing. Everyone has a story. There are patients and neighbors, our friends and coworkers. They're the people who make our community so vivid and rich. That's why we don't see a broken bone, a cough, or a medical chart. We see you. Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center, Florence. Practicing medicine with dignity, love, and understanding across the Pacific Northwest.
Joining me for Doc Talk this month is Wendy Sullivan. She is the Mobile Integrated Healthcare Paramedic with Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, George. Thank you.
You're
How
welcome.
Are you?
You're welcome. I'm doing good and glad to have you. I hadn't met you before, and it's really odd because I try to get around a little bit and meet everybody from now on now, but you know, Matt's always getting on me about being a little bit more visible. So glad you're here today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about you. All right. Mm-hmm. Your background is.
My background is varied. I have been a paramedic for 11 or 12 years at this point. I have worked in the Florence community either full-time or part-time almost since I got my paramedic, since 2011. I grew up on the East Coast. I was in the Navy for 9 years. I worked as an engineer for a number of years, and I've worked in education teaching for many, many years of my career.
So where in the East Coast did you grow up?
I grew up on the Eastern Shore of Maryland.
Okay.
In some ways, it's very similar. It's a waterfront community where many people make their living off the water. We have a tenuous connection with the more urban centers of Maryland, and very rural.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I was picturing it like big, robust, bustling kind of, thing like New York City there. But I guess it's every area is different a little bit.
Right. When I was five, we moved to a street. We were the only permanent house on the street. All the other houses were summer houses.
Wow.
So,
wow,
and we were about 30 minutes from the grocery store in that location. So
how close were you to, I guess that's far enough away from D.C. though, right?
We were about an hour from D.C. and about an hour from Baltimore.
So right in kind of in the middle there or
mm-hmm.
just distance
right
line.
In the middle, north-south, but over on the eastern side of the Chesapeake Bay.
So when you're going to school and you're growing up, what are you thinking about your career? I mean, are you thinking about a career in healthcare, or did you have other plans? Were you going in a different direction at one point?
So my mother was a RN. She was a nurse. And I grew up thinking, how does one even be an adult if one isn't a nurse? Because it seemed to influence so many of her decisions and her thinking process. However, my brain is more of a problem-solving brain as opposed to a memorizing brain. And frankly, biology scared me with the knowledge base. And I've gravitated towards engineering and computers in high school. And that seemed like a good direction to go. So my undergraduate and graduate education are in engineering. I worked in that field for 5 years after graduate school. I worked in the engineering field when I was in the Navy.
Okay. And the Navy, did you do 5 years and then go into the Navy, or was it sort of commingled in that?
So I went to the Naval Academy. Okay. So I did 4 years there, and then I spent 5 years in the fleet after
okay.
that.
So yeah, it was all Navy then at that point. Yeah, okay, cool. Well, congratulations. I mean, it's a big feat to graduate from the Naval Academy.
Thank you. It was a lot of work, and it is good experience, honestly, for the population I serve, because so many of my patients are veterans.
That's true, yeah, and especially around here, we have a big veteran population.
It's a way that I make a connection with my patients.
So being part of Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority, and then the idea of you're on Doc Talk, which is sponsored by Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center. How are the two of them kind of intermingled? And I've kind of had this conversation before, but it's nice to kind of get a fresh perspective on it.
Right. So from Western Lane's perspective, we're working on creating bridges between our patients and all of the healthcare system. Now, many of the patients at Peace Health in the clinic, especially the emergency room in the hospital, they had an EMS call as part of that experience. So they're the same patients. From the Peace Health perspective, MIH is a vital part of the continuum of healthcare, from home to clinic to hospital and back home again. And I play a role in helping patients not only recover from their illnesses, but also be well when they're at home.
And in larger cities, I mean, if an ambulance picks up somebody, takes them to the hospital, that's probably the last time they see them a lot in a lot of communities.
It is, and traditionally that has been the way it is. MIH is a growing field. It's a little bit different in every community, but because we have so much experience working in the community, we find that paramedics are sort of uniquely placed to help bridge the gap for patients in healthcare.
And because of the size of our community, it's not unlikely that you might see the same person more than once, you know, in an emergency situation or in a healthcare situation.
Correct.
So what is your average day like when you get up in the morning or you go in at night? I don't know if you work a certain shift or.
Yeah. So one of the benefits of my position is I get to sleep in my own bed at night and turn my phone off. So I come into work in the morning and I spend the first couple of hours sort of preparing for my day, looking at what patients are on my schedule and then reviewing what caused them to be on my schedule. Were they in the hospital? If they were in the hospital, what were their instructions to go home with and how long have they been home? And try to find out what kind of supports they have and what their barriers to getting well again might be. And if they were an emergency room patient, sometimes I do fall assessments, and so I would prepare a little bit differently for that type of patient. I also need to find out exactly where they are. It's really easy when they have a street address that's in town, but sometimes the more rural addresses I am not familiar with, so I make use of some computer things and, you know, plan out how I'm going to get to each of the places I need to go. I might print out some paperwork because often I go places where there's not cell phone access. So I just have papers to refer to, and it makes it nicer for the patients too if I'm not on my computer while I'm actually talking to them. After I have my schedule and have reviewed my patients for the day, then I begin my visits. And so typically I would start and do a patient visit, spend anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes, up to an hour and a half. If I have a complicated patient, sometimes I am there longer than planned. And where we're trying to sort through whatever problems there might be, sort through whatever resources they might need, answer any questions. And from my perspective, just trying to assess if there's any barriers to what we're trying to accomplish. And then I'll come back to the office and chart that in the Peace Health charting system so that their primary care has access to what happened, so that any emergency room providers or future providers have access to what happened at our visit. And I might also have follow-ups to resources. You know, did this person need to get connected with some veterans organizations? Did they need, do I need to find out, you know, they thought they had a phone number from discharge planning and it turns out that they didn't write that phone number down. And so, or maybe they have a care manager, nurse, and we need to get a question answered about their medications. And so I might spend some time making phone calls after my visit as well.
I'm speaking with Wendy Sullivan. She is the MIH paramedic, Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority, and we're on this monthly edition of Doc Talk. We'll be back in just a moment.
At Peace Health, we believe no one is ever just one thing. Everyone has a story. There are patients and neighbors, our friends and coworkers. They're the people who make our community so vivid and rich. That's why we don't see a broken bone, a cough, or a medical chart. We see you. Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center, Florence. Practicing medicine with dignity, love, and understanding across the Pacific Northwest.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. One out of eight. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
I'm speaking with Wendy Sullivan. She's the Mobile Integrated Health Care Paramedic for West Helene Fire and EMS Authority, and in conjunction with collaboration with Peace Harbor Medical Center. Wendy, how does what you do supplement the primary care provider position?
So from a primary care provider's position, they are seeing the patient in the clinic, in their office, out of the patient's own environment. Some patients are very good historians and very reliable in communicating to their provider how they take their medications, what's going on, and that sort of thing. Sometimes providers have concerns that can't be addressed outside of the patient's own environment. And so they might make a referral for me to go in and do a home safety assessment if the patient's been having falls, or perhaps an assessment of if they're really taking their medications the way they say they're taking, or just to find out what's going on at home because the patient seems to be uncompliant. And the provider can't figure out why. Sometimes I can find that out when I'm in the patient's home in their own environment.
They're a little more relaxed, a little more less reluctant to give information, do you have to be intuitive sometimes and kind of get a lay of the land just by kind of looking around too?
I do both of those things, George. Sometimes I am physically inspecting parts of the home. You know, are there fall hazards in the home? How does the patient negotiate in their home? Do they have a good system? I can lay eyes on how they're taking their medications, get them to show me physically where they are and how they decide what to take and how to take it. And so I can report, well, actually, this patient really is taking their medications properly, even though you in the office weren't sure because of how they reported it, whether they were or not. This is what they seem to be doing. Or this is why, you know, now after seeing their environment, I can tell you why they're not taking their medications properly and maybe what we need to do about it. I can't tell the primary care provider what to do about it, but I can say, well, this kind of thing would work and this kind of thing won't work.
This is what
patient.
I recognized while I was there in the
right,
home.
Right.
I mean, it could be something as simple as the patient's really unorganized to the patient just doesn't want to do it. You know, something
exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. Exactly. And often when patients don't want to do things, they have a good reason for it, but it takes a little bit longer to dig into and understand what that reason is.
Does it help you then developing a relationship in order to maybe bring them along to where they're more compliant? I mean,
oh, absolutely. By being in their home, that's usually that's my second priority is to work on building a relationship with the patient so that they trust me to let me see in their home. First off, you know, it requires a much greater level of trust than going to the doctor's office and communicating with them. And so I work hard to establish that, and so I can be a conduit of communication and bridge the gap.
Yeah, I guess so, because I'm just thinking about it now. I mean, I go into the doctor's office. I can tell the doctor anything I want to tell them. You know, if you just want to appease them rather than taking care of your own health, you know. But when you get in the home, it's different.
Exactly. You know, sometimes I go to people's home and they've completely forgotten about the appointment, and I can find out a lot about what's going on in the home, and possibly have some solutions, you know, understand what the patient can and wants to do and help them find the supports they need to get better.
Let's talk a little bit about the program. Now, obviously, this is kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, this is kind of a new model. I mean, as far as how things are done in the last so many years, really.
It's relatively new. MIH has been growing throughout the country for a couple of decades now. It's relatively new to Lane County. The MIH program here in Florence started in 2017, And I think we've been providing care to patients since, I don't know what part of 2017. I started in the beginning of 2019. So I think that there was providing care for 2 years before I started.
So you weren't in the integral parts of getting it all set up.
Exactly.
So you didn't. You weren't like the hey, I can let's do this or let's do that. That was already established by the time you got in there.
Exactly.
And what is who staffs the mobile integrated healthcare other than you? Obviously, you're there, but there's people that.
So I'm the person who provides patient care. I have support from Peace Health in the form of the providers that I work for, but also there's an employee of Peace Health. Her job title there is the emergency department referral coordinator, but she also makes phone calls and schedules patients on my schedule so that I don't have to spend part of my day making phone calls to patients and setting up appointments. And then I'm also supported by the staff at Western Lane Fire and EMS.
Now, you said you've been doing it since 2019, but you've been in the community a little bit longer than that. Prior to that, you were just a paramedic on duty, or what? How would...
I worked in the emergency department full-time starting in 2011, and then I continued on there part-time after I took a job in Eugene for a few years before I came back here for this job.
Now, you mentioned it's been going on a couple decades. Is there anything unique to Florence that we do here, and we may have already talked about it, that might be different than a larger community or a different community?
Right. So because mobile integrated healthcare is trying to bridge the gaps in healthcare, the specific healthcare needs of every community tend to be a little bit different. You know, many larger cities have much bigger issues with unhoused patients and patients with opioid addiction. Not that we don't have those problems here, but our biggest population is retired people, right? It's older adults who are having chronic healthcare issues that result in hospitalizations, that result in falls, that result in repeated calls to the emergency medical system.
And oddly enough, we are doing healthcare well enough that our patients are living longer, but they're not always living better. How does what you do maybe help them to live a little better?
So one of my goals for almost all of my patients is to help them stay well or get well so they can stay at home. And that's the same goal that most of the patients have too. So it makes us work together as a team to try to figure out what it is that they need in order to stay well, get well, and stay in their own home.
What happens if you recognize that someone may also have some mental health issues on there? Is there some way that you can, you know, hand them off to somebody else, or is there somebody else in the department that can come in and work with them as well as part of mobile integrated health?
So Western Lane Fire and EMS has a crisis response unit. So if somebody was in a crisis that seemed to result from mental health, then certainly I, just like the police or the other paramedics on the ambulance, can call on the crisis response team to help deal with that. If it was more of a chronic problem, then I would be working through the primary care provider and saying, hey, this person is complaining of these particular symptoms, and I don't see any referral to mental health. I don't see a referral to behavioral health. Is there something that you can do to facilitate that?
So it doesn't necessarily have to be in a crisis situation in order to get them help.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's pretty cool. I'm speaking with Wendy Sullivan. She's with Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority. She's the mobile integrated healthcare paramedic. And we're having a good talk on this edition of Doc Talk.
At Peace Health, we believe no one is ever just one thing. Everyone has a story. There are patients and neighbors, our friends and coworkers. They're the people who make our community so vivid and rich. That's why we don't see a broken bone, a cough, or a medical chart. We see you. Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center, Florence. Practicing medicine with dignity, love, and understanding across the Pacific Northwest.
At some point in her life, one out of every eight women will get breast cancer. 1 out of 8. Most women can beat it, but only with early detection. Don't let breast cancer stop you. Mammograms save lives.
Better total care. Peace Harbor Imaging now has digital mammograms. Get one.
I have the pleasure of speaking with Wendy Sullivan. She's with Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority. She is the mobile integrated healthcare paramedic. And I've talked with paramedics before, but just give an overall view of the paramedic kind of job description.
Well, paramedics in different places have very different job descriptions, right? I'm not responding to 911 calls like the average paramedic on a fire unit or on an ambulance would. I respond to referrals that are placed non-emergently, perhaps urgently. Sometimes the referral wants a patient to be seen within a few days. Did I answer your question, George?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you did. Talk about the areas that you serve. Obviously, Florence is very spread out, at least the Florence area, this part of Western Lane County. And I'm assuming, and maybe wrongly so, that you kind of hit the same geographic areas that Western Lane Fire and EMS handles.
That's right, George. I serve the same geographical areas as the ambulance provides service to. The ambulance communities serves the communities including Florence, Westlake, Dune City, Mercer and Munsell Lake areas. We respond also to the more rural areas of Mapleton, Swiss Home, Deadwood, and Walton areas. So the ambulance covers 590 square miles, and that's the area that I would be able to respond to as well.
I didn't hear in there how far north, or maybe I missed that. Do you go?
So basically the county line.
County line up the north part, yeah.
Yeah, so all of Western Lane County. And the
county line to the south too then, I imagine. Okay.
Right.
And then it's Douglas or Lincoln on the other side to take
Correct.
Care of that. Okay. Now, are you mainly given referrals by the primary care physicians? How do people get connected with mobile integrated health?
Right. So there's, I think, four main referral sources. One of those is the primary care providers. One of those is the other paramedics who work on the ambulance. They refer high utilizers and also patients that they feel might need a better connection to the healthcare system to me. I'm referred by the emergency department personnel, either because they have specific concerns about a patient or if they have the specific concern that this is a patient over 65 who's had a fall. And finally, I'm referred patients from the hospital, usually patients who have a predetermined set of diagnoses, which have been shown to more commonly readmit to the hospital within 30 days. For example, congestive heart failure is one of those.
Because you mentioned falls is a pretty big one, because I think that's, as we get older, a lot of us have an issue with, you know, I notice that people tend to start maybe shuffling their feet more rather than picking them up, and they don't do that extra. What kind of a routine can you talk about with a person? Obviously, you want to set the house up so that it's semi-fall-proof or as fall-proof as you can get it, but there must be other things that you work with them on how to prevent those things.
Often one of the biggest barriers to people being safe from falls is their own thinking process, because we all like to think that we're super capable and those bad things aren't going to happen to us. And so part of my initial approach is just education. It's like, you know, this is something that people die from. This is something that people lose their independence from, which is falling. Ground level falls for people over 65. About every 20 minutes, somebody in this country dies from a ground level fall that's over 65.
Wow.
It's a very significant risk. And in the Florence community, if you ignore all the injuries that happen on the dunes, ground level falls are our biggest source of traumas.
Wow. That's...
So it's much more significant than many people think if they aren't in the field. And then the second component of the education is convincing people that being prepared before they need grab bars in their bathroom, before they need to pick up their rugs, before they need to do certain things around their house, have ramps, if they start preparing for it. It's like, this isn't about what you can or can't do today. This is what you might not be able to do next week when you catch the flu, or, you know, next year when you come home from the hospital after having had COVID and you're weak and you want to be in your own home, how will it be safe? Because at that point, it's too late to get a grab bar installed in your bathroom. It's too late to get a new toilet that's higher and easier to get on and off of. But yet you might be at your weakest point in those first few days after you come home. And so you want to prepare.
This is probably politically incorrect, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. I notice as a male that I tend to be a lot more stubborn when it comes to, you know, listening to the things that I need. Like you said, you know, people don't necessarily want to believe that they're not superheroes anymore or superhuman anymore. Are some patients more difficult than others? I mean, male to female ratio. I mean, you know, I mean, I could picture the time comes if I need a walker, I'm going to fight that. I know that that's going to happen.
You and so many other people. I wouldn't say that there's a gender divide. Some of the most stubborn patients I've had have been women. And I always bring it back to, you know, being stubborn is a good indicator for living long, if that's what you want, because stubborn people do. I bring it back to, what do you want to achieve? Do you want to stay in your own home? So here are some ways to do that. And again, it comes back to the connection and the education. Not just necessarily scaring people, but also just educating them. It's like, here's some things you can do that's not going to hurt you, right? And reminding them about the ways that our brains do that, right? Our brains think that we are just as capable as we were when we were 20, given free rein.
Right.
So we have to do a little bit of thinking process to overcome that. And each person is different in what way they're going to use to overcome that. And I frequently start by, what is it that you want? Do you want to stay in this home as long as possible? Do you want to move someplace where someone else is going to take care of you? So if we start from that place, it's a lot easier to get to, what do I need to do to achieve that goal?
I guess it's difficult to talk to people about how they might not be able to do the things they used to do. For example, I used to be able to climb up and down a ladder and not even thinking about it. Now I get a couple steps up and I'm very conscious of, okay, where's my foot? Where are my hands? How do I feel? Do I feel stable? But I imagine, you know, there are some points where I like, well, no, I can still do this, but I just have to be more careful about what I'm doing.
Right. And part of my visit, when I do a post-fall visit, would be a physical fall assessment that looks at strength, endurance, and balance. And so I can assign numbers and a pass-fail. Are you a fall risk, or do your numbers indicate not a fall risk? And sometimes when patients see that, and we can talk about, well, you can improve these things. You know, many people can improve their balance, their strength, their endurance using physical therapy or exercise classes. And by addressing this as a way to get better, that it makes it easier for people to accommodate the fact that they're at risk.
So much is said in the media and that about, you know, how the older population, you know, has to become more dependent in that. But what I'm hearing you saying is that if someone has the desire, they can get better. They can get stronger. I mean, they don't have to sit there and go, I'm done. I guess that goes back to the stubborn part.
That's right. That's right.
What about the cost of services? Is mobile integrated healthcare, is that covered by insurances? Is that, you know?
So far, the program has not done any billing to patients or to insurance. We would like to be able to bill insurance, but we're not at that point yet. Ambulances bill when they transport patients, and I don't transport patients. So far, we've had funding from grants, from the Peace Health Foundation, from the Peace Health Corporation, and this year it's supported by a combination of Western Lane Fire and EMS and Peace Health are providing funding for the program. We are always looking for innovative ways to create additional funding to keep the program going.
So it's nice that you don't have to bill the patient themselves for the services they get.
Exactly. It means that any patient who could benefit from the services is entitled to get them.
Now, a couple decades in, you've been in it since 2019. So have you seen any significant differences between 2019 and 2023? And do you see anything significantly changing in how the program runs or works or provides care?
Well, one change, of course, during the pandemic and even now after the pandemic, I see that patients' social needs are much greater, right? I was one of the few regular providers in the very beginning who was still visiting patients in their home if they were okay with that. So I found patients really appreciated having a person come to their home and be interested in helping them. And I feel like we haven't gotten past that yet. I still feel that many of the older adults in our community still suffering from the isolation that happened during the pandemic. As a result, I feel like there's perhaps a higher level of acuity in the patients that I've seen on a typical day in 2023 compared to 2019.
It's amazing what the pandemic did to us, you know, on a social level. I mean, it really kind of gets in people's heads, right? And then
it does. Yeah,
wow. But luckily, you've still been able to get out there and spend some time with them. So you've helped probably a bunch of people.
I hope so.
I guess that would be, you were talking about noticing anything impactful from working with a mobile integrated health. You have any stories you can share? Obviously, we can't share names and stuff like that, but maybe a success story that you're particularly proud of working in the program?
Yes. First of all, I'll say that Peace Health made a video last year that highlights a couple of patients. I can give you the details after the interview, George, on how to access that. And one of my recent experiences, I walked into a patient visit and I was greeted by her caregiver, who was a patient I saw last year. At that time, he could barely make it from the bed in his trailer to the bathroom in his trailer because his health was so poor. And since that time, he's lost 50 pounds. His health condition is almost entirely reversed. And he was providing care to somebody else.
That's pretty awesome.
I almost didn't recognize him. He was such a different person from when I had worked with him as a patient. And it made me feel so happy to see him giving back to other people.
I guess that's one of the gratifying aspects of your job. There's probably some sad ones too, but I don't want to go into the dark side on that. But I just want to say thank you so much for being here today. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you felt was important or that others thought you might want to discuss?
I think we hit on just about everything.
Okay.
Thanks, George.
I appreciate you being in here. This is really great. Good to get to know more about the program. I kind of had talked with Matt House before and Chief Schick regarding this, but it's good to hear it from someone who's actually doing the work. Thank you.
Well, it was great to be here. Thanks, George.
Wendy Sullivan, she's with Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority in collaboration with Peace Harbor Medical Center. She's the mobile integrated healthcare paramedic, and thank you so much.
You have been listening to Doc Talk, presented by Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. For more information on the program and services provided, visit peacehealth.org.